This is the Primal King Podcast, but first, a quick message.
Crosso Ranch has raised premium beef for 5 generations, but we've always kept it to ourselves, but not anymore. You now have the ability to get ranch-raised, USDA-certified beef from our mountains in Idaho delivered directly to your dinner table. Don't settle for growth hormones, steroids, or imported beef on the store shelves anymore. Go to CrossoMeats.com right now to place your order. Your body and your taste buds will thank you for it. Even our girls think it's really yummy.
Buy Crosso Meats. I love it.
What is up, everybody? This is the Primal King Podcast, and this is episode number 70. All right, so definitely excited for my guest today. He's just a character. Love the guy. Such a good guy. I have the pleasure of knowing him for a few years now. He's kind of like me. Grew up in a small town, maybe a little bit of an anomaly in certain ways. You'll see what I mean once you get started, but a ton of wisdom, ton of knowledge, and just an all-around good guy. So I'm excited for this. All right, let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name is Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. All right, welcome back, everybody. Super excited to be able to talk to my guest today. This is someone who has made millions of dollars within the information marketing space, actually even been a top 1% seller in Amazon. On top of that, he runs multiple other businesses, ranging from, again, the makeup school to coaching and various other ventures over the years. With his focus and determination, he's excelled in what would seem to be polar opposite endeavors, such as competitive cycling and bodybuilding, as well as calf roping. One of the biggest accomplishments, however, is building an amazing marriage with his wife, Sunny, and raising a great family along the way. I'd like to introduce the billion-dollar cowboy, Bart Miller. Bart, again, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, man, what a great introduction. I need you to be with me everywhere. Make me feel like
you need a hype man? I'm here for you.
Oh, man, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Great to
All right,
be.
So I want to get into, because you're such a fascinating person. I mean, generally one of the nicest people I was able to meet in my years at ClickFunnels. You're an Idaho guy. Of course you're a good guy, but I got to ask you, what's with the billion dollar cowboy? Cause I know people are going to want to know what is kind of where did that come from?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, let's just put back in perspective. When I was a young kid, I was raised by my grandmother. And we were super, super poor at that point in time. Like, put it in perspective, we had a coal stove that heated the house. Now, a lot of people won't even know what that is, but really coal. Poured it in there. It only heated our living room. So none of the external rooms were heated, right? And my grandfather, that I never really got to know, was a horseman. And he stood a really cool stud. And I was in love with horses, and horses saved my life. I mean, they really did. Like, through everything I went through in life, they were my passion. So as I got older, I started to what we call rodeo. Yeah, everybody knows that a little bit. And I did a lot of fun stuff in that space, and was able to accomplish a lot of fun things. And then I decided, when my family was getting a little bit older, they didn't love being freezing cold. They didn't love horses. They didn't love that kind of stuff. So I had to put it on pause, because to me, family was first. And so I sold everything. And Derek, when I mean I sold everything, like every bridle, every bit, I didn't have one horse thing, because it was a very emotional thing for me. Like, it brought up a lot of emotion and a lot of things. But one thing that my wife and I made an agreement on was, when I came back, and I would come back, that we would never leave it again. And so 2 years ago, my little guy, Xander, he decided that he kind of liked horses, which, dang, that's too bad for me, right? So I went and had him start to ride my brother's horse, and we saw it was going to stick. So I bought him his first little white mare, and she was absolutely amazing. But when I came back into this, I was kind of at a different point in my life. And so 2 years ago, I hate to even admit this on this podcast, because it's the first time publicly I think I've ever said this, but I spent $500,000 in horse stuff. I came back like in a big way. So when that happens, your saddles are new, your bits are new, Your clothing's kind of new. Hey,
so how much crap did you get? I got to ask you that when you showed up at an arena or something.
Yeah. So I've got a really nice arena. I have got a wonderful, amazing live-in quarters that would blow your mind. I've got a heart trailer that is just my bumper. It's not a bumper pole. It's a fifth wheel that is kind of got a day stay type of thing in it. I've got my cow hauling trailer, because you know you can't haul your cows in your horse trailers. I've got a cow hauling trailer. I've got two Duramax pickups, and I leave one hooked up all the time. It's my big fancy dually. I mean, I could go on all day, but I kind of went all in. And so all my old friends, which is, you know, this, once you've networked into a thing, people don't just forget you. So I would show up at these ropings, and when I would walk in, everybody's like, "Oh, you're back. My hell, you look like you're a billionaire." I'm like, "Oh." So I had these Louis Vuitton sunglasses that I always wear just because they were part of my life. Like, I love Louis Vuitton sunglasses. So they saw the Louis Vuitton sunglasses, and the name of the Billion Dollar Cowboy came because everybody started calling me the Billion Dollar Cowboy when I show up at ropings. The announcers would start to announce me as that. And so anyway, I show up at ClickFunnels, at Inner Circle stuff, and Russell's like, "I hate that name." Like, but anyway, it kind of stuck amongst a lot of people and everything like that. But so I don't know if that answers you, but that's how I got the name.
Oh, that's good stuff. It's funny because before my dad died, my sister bought a new horse trailer, like a fancy horse trailer, right? And so he used to always call it her queening horse trailer. It couldn't just be a horse trailer because it was fancy. So no, I get it. That's funny. Yeah. So you grew up super poor. Because one of the things I know that people really love to hear about is, you know, when you kind of maybe don't come from a super privileged background, but then you build up to where you can be called the Billion Dollar Cowboy because you have all the nice stuff. Yeah. Like, where did that transition happen? And maybe more so, like, how did that happen to go from growing up super poor to now being somebody who makes obviously good money?
Yeah. So can we be vulnerable and transparent on this podcast, or we got
absolutely
a whole bunch absolutely of smoke? All right. So as a cowboy, you always have to keep your word. And that's one thing you'll find that I love about the culture of the Western culture. And so I'm just going to be brutally honest with you. Pain, I figured out that pain outweighs pleasure in a really quick hurry in my life, right? When you're really, really poor, there's a lot of pain that comes with that. Now, I know a lot of people on here are like, "Oh, come on." But reality is you see a lot of your friends around you that go do things that you can't do. You start to see things from a different lens because things are, they're not always as easy as you want them to be. And I remember going out feeding cows every single day and wishing that I had a tractor with a front end loader instead of having to pull a bell behind the tractor. And there was a lot of stuff like that. And the pain of that was a real driving force for me. And I knew that I was going to escape this no matter what happened in my life. And so I really learned this thing called pain versus pleasure. And I coach on it still to this day. When the pain outweighs the pleasure, you're going to get a lot of shit done because we always address pain first. And so I knew that. I saw that. And so when I was starting my career out, I was lucky enough to attract a gentleman that was in sales, and he owned a huge construction company, and he happened to be a distant relative. And he introduced me to a lot of principles and things to that nature. And he started to mentor me. And then I figured out the importance of a mentor and what they can do in your life. And that started to point me in directions that, praise the Lord above, that made huge impacts in my life. And then I started to grow from there. But the real answer to it is that I wanted to avoid the pain in my life that I was facing. And so I had to figure it out. And it drove me to become who I am today.
No, it's so good because I think that a lot of people, they view the process of maybe accumulating some of these things like you're talking about as being painful. But I always look at it to where, you know, real pain is talking to your wife about not being able to pay a bill, right? Yeah. Or telling your kids that they have to go without because you can't afford it. Yeah. But I think a lot of people get stuck there. So, I mean, and I know that you've coached a lot of people and you've inspired a lot of people, and we'll get into more of the stuff that you've done in your life. But maybe if there is someone that's like, "Man, COVID's been brutal. It's like, I don't even know what to do. Yes, it sucks. I'm in pain, but like, what do I even do?" What would you tell someone like that?
Yeah, I'll tell you what so I had this aha moment about 5 years ago. And I hire coaches, a lot of coaches. You're going to find that out as we go through here. And one of the things I demand from my coaches is brutal honesty, and to push me to my limits. Okay. And it was just one of those things. So if I hired you, Derek, that's what I would expect from you. Right. And you'd be okay with that. And you'd dish out a lot of things that would be damn tough for me to face and to probably go through because you want me to grow, but that's what I'm expecting from you. Right. And in that, one day I remember I was saying my prayers. I was like, God, you're putting me through all this pain. And I mean, I'm going through hell right now. Like, why are you doing this to me? And all of a sudden, it was just like this voice of him saying, you pay others to put you through hell. Yet when I put you through hell and I test you, you're mad at me. You get ticked off at me, but you don't get mad at them. You actually pay them. You're grateful for them. And you're so excited that they're pushing you to the next level. But when I do it, what do? You get mad. You get pissed off. You're frustrated with me. You tell me off. Why aren't you helping me? When reality is I'm doing exactly what you've been paying these others to help you do, but you're never grateful. So once you decide to be grateful, then we can talk again. And I was like, oh shit. Wow. So what I'd tell them is this. We sometimes cuss things that we've been demanding for our entire lives. We let somebody else get away with doing it, but when it happens in a different way, we look at it from a different perspective. So I would say stand back and look at what the blessings that this has brought you, not the problems that it's brought you, and be grateful.
Dang, that's so good. That is so good. And it is funny, right? Like, how often do we pay people, trainers, right? Get me in shape. Okay, we're going to put you through pain. I don't care. Just get me in shape. But then when it comes to more, like you said, like the spiritual side of it, it's like, oh, God hates me. You know, what did I do wrong? What did I do to deserve this? So
I was 100% that person. I hate to admit it, but there was times I was like, you know, you're putting me through way too much. And God was like, really? Like, come on. But honestly, you know, yeah. Anyway, lesson learned.
Yeah, no, that's great stuff. And I think that's something too, that people can really look at and appreciate and be able to implement. I mean, even for me, I'm like, that makes such great sense. It's crazy. I've never looked at it that way. So no, that's great. Now, the other thing too, that you've done is you're a bodybuilder, right? So you kind of come from like the cowboy side, if you will, the ranching side of it. Did you actually grow up on a ranch then, like most of your upbringing?
So it wasn't a ranch. It was a small farm. We only had 40 acres, but back then it was, you know, we had the tractors, we baled our hay, we did our thing, we raised cows, you know, that kind of stuff. But yeah, I came from a farm, but I wouldn't quite call it a ranch. Yeah.
Okay. So you go through all that. Did you go to college?
So I did. I go into college. A college found out it really wasn't for me and I wasn't for it. And that's a story within itself. But yes, I did go to college. In fact, trivial thing, I went to college on a dance scholarship, believe it or not.
On a dance. How did that work, being a farmer? Yeah. The anomaly of Bart Miller lives on, man. I would say I'm surprised at that, but I'm honestly not.
It was a dance scholarship, and it's kind of a funny story how that all happened, but it did happen, and then I was training horses at college.
Oh, wow. So you're on a dance scholarship training horses.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Awesome. Those are a couple of things I never thought we'd put together, but again, no, that's just great stuff. So you go to college, and then did you get into more like the business space after that, or did you go work a job for a while, or how was the transition to get into maybe the business space that you're in now?
Yeah, great question. So what I did from there is I was part of the LDS religion, so Latter-day Saints, and I decided to go on a mission. So I served a mission in Japan. I got back from that mission. And I'd only been in college before I left on my mission with my scholarship for, I think it was 3 months before I left. So I was going to an LDS school, which back then was called Ricks College. Now it's called BYU Idaho. And they held my scholarship. And as soon as I got back, 2 months after I was back, we went to Spain and France that was part of our dance scholarship. We had to go there and perform. So we left for, I think it was 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that. And toured all of Spain and France, danced. So I danced across that. And I really saw the international life, knew I wanted to be an international business. So I started in, my classes were to be an international business major. And I spoke Japanese. And back then, like I'm 47 years old, to put it in perspective, that was the language to know. Like I was like, everybody was like, holy shit, if you speak Japanese, you're going to be a billionaire, right? Type of thing. So I went right into business. And I was in an economics class, and the teacher of that class, praise the Lord above, was super integral and honest. And I'll never forget, I won't mention his name, but I've met him several times. We've had this conversation, but I'll never forget. I raised my hand in class and I asked him, I said, "Hey, all this stuff that you're teaching me, if you're so smart at it," and I wasn't trying to be a smart ass. I literally was just honestly trying to figure this out. I was like, "Why aren't you out there doing it today? Why are you here teaching us?" And he goes, "Those who can do and those who can't teach." And he didn't mean that to belittle himself either. But it was like one of those moments that I was just like, so is what you're saying is if I can perform and I can do, I should go do that. And he goes, "Exactly." And I said, "Man, thank you. Thank you for being honest with me." And I shut my books and I walked out of class that day and I never showed back up again. And that's how I ended my college career, was right there at that moment. And so I went from there right into sales because I knew I could sell. And I started to work for a little company called Bish Jenkins, which was selling saddles and Western wear. And as I sold that stuff, I got dang good at it. And I loved it. I was super passionate about it. In fact, we had this monitor that we could see how many sales. We were all straight commission, so we could see our sales, and we were all competing on the floor. And it was a ton of fun. So, you know, I really thrived in that environment. Well, there was a gentleman that walked in one day. And when I got done, he looked at me and he goes, "You need to work for me." And I'm like, "Okay, what do you do?" He goes, "I own a furniture company and out of Salt Lake City." And I'm like, "Okay, cool." He goes, "So I want you to check this out, and I want you to, you know, consider this." And I'm like, "All right, great." So I met this gentleman and found out that he had a really cool manufacturing plant, and he had opened a furniture store, and he was part of the Jewish religion. And so he knew that space inward and outward. So long story short, I started selling furniture. That was my next sales job. I went from selling there to the kind of a long story how I got out of that. And I got into the TV space. And that's a funny story in itself. But I started selling advertising. And that is when I really was like, oh man, do I love marketing? And I am good at it. And so it was fun. I did a fun process there in the marketing and sales world. And then I decided to go from there into real estate. Then I owned a mortgage company, a real estate company, and a for sale owner business. And then I could go on. But that's kind of how my career started.
So was every time you'd kind of take that next jump, because I know, like, even for me, when I walked away from ClickFunnels, it was always like, okay, where do you go from here? How do you know if this is the right thing to do? Do I go off on my own or that? Like, did you ever have a process that you went through to be like, okay, I'm going from furniture to real estate? Or was it just like things just kind of happened and fell into your lap? Or how do you make those decisions like that?
Well, if I'm transparent with you, it was because I had a bad temper. And that's really what it came down to. So in the furniture space, we had a commission structure set up and we were supposed to get a bonus. And the manager over both stores decided not to give me that bonus. And to me, I felt it really pissed me off. So I basically told him, "Screw yourself then, I quit." And he goes, "You can't quit, you're making too good of money." And I said, "Look, man, no one controls this kid. I'm out of here." And literally it was 10 o'clock in the day. He had nobody to run his store. And I walked out the front door and left it wide open. Got in my car and left. And back then, cell phones were not the cheapest thing and not everybody had one. And I did happen to have one at that point. He called me several times. I didn't answer. Finally, the owner of the store called me and he's like, "Hey, I understand what happened. I apologize for what happened." I said, "Look, you know, no apology needed, you know, but this is just my morals and ethics. And, you know, if you can't do that, I'm not going to do this." And what was cool about him was he mailed me the check for what he owed me, even though the supervisor is the one that kind of the whole thing started around. So he was very integral. But at that point, I was done. So I'd left that. And so I was in, like, not going to lie, panic state, pain versus pleasure again, right? So it's that pain mode. And so that kicked in. I was married at that time. So it really kicked in because they have to go home and tell your wife that because of your temper, you just quit a very profitable job. And my father-in-law was in a little bit of a freak out mode. And so he was in the newspaper. Anyway, long story short, he told me an advertising company, which was a TV station, was looking for somebody. So I feel like I'm kind of going on this, but just bear with me. It's kind of funny. But anyway, so I went and applied for this job at this TV station that he told me. Well, it was the wrong TV station. It was the other station. So I was like, "What? Are you kidding me?" So I get there and the manager actually took a meeting with me. And he's like, So I told him what had happened after I realized he didn't have a job opportunity. And he goes, no, you can't go interview with him. Like, we're going to hire you. And I'm like, oh no. Oh no. Like, I'm going over there. And I was determined that I was going to interview with these other people. So he made me a really good offer. I went over anyways, interviewed with, as soon as I walked in the interview, I was like, these guys aren't for me. So I went back and he's like, welcome aboard. And he was the one that mentored me in my marketing journey. And thank goodness for him. And that was owned by Retlaw Broadcasting. If you spell Retlaw backwards, it's Walt Disney. A lot of people don't know that Lillian Disney was from Idaho, and he owned that TV station in Idle Falls, Idaho, believe it or not. And so we were owned by Walt Disney. And so he sold that off to Fisher Broadcasting, and I'm not going to get into the rest of it, but that's how I went. Is Fisher Broadcasting, I'll make it quick. So Fisher Broadcasting bought it. At that point, I had created a marketing strategy that I was one of the number one salespeople in the whole entire state of Idaho in advertising. And what I would do, Derek, is I'd walk into somebody that had an agency, and I would teach them everything an agency was doing. And I would put their full year plan together with radio, with all my competitors, hand it to them, and cut the agency clear out. And they would sign a year contract with me, sign a year contract with everybody else they needed to. I had it all mapped out for them. Agencies hated my guts. They wanted to shoot me in the head like I was their worst nightmare. And that made me the one that I basically had all my book of business done. Well, Fisher, when they bought the company out, they said, hey, we want you to go help coach this. And I'm like, no. Long story short, we got in a little bit of a tussle. I quit that job, and that's how I got into real estate. Man, wow. Really rebel, but there you go. That's how it happened.
So basically you kind of kept moving your way up because you weren't willing to accept stuff though, right? Because I think that's so much that most people are willing to kind of eat the proverbial shit sandwich just because they've got a good job, they've got the benefits. Yep. But it seems like the people that I talk to who are the most successful are the ones who kind of have their expectations at a certain level. Yep. And once that drops below that, they're like, no, I'm out. You know, whereas a lot of people will stay kind of continuing in that, maybe that job that they know isn't full of integrity, or they know that isn't getting them where they want to be because of the fear of walking away. So how do you embrace that fear? Because that's one of the biggest things, right? Like, how do you answer your wife when you come home? It's like, honey, I did it again. I got pissed at work and I quit. Like,
yeah, that's the $1 million question for me, because I think it just comes down to, like you just said, what is it that you're not willing to sacrifice for? Because none of those companies were bad. I wouldn't say like any of those humans were bad. It was just a situational, you know, a situation. And at that point in my life, I had a decision to make, right? And it's just the decision that I knew I had to make. And no matter what, I had to face it, you know. But I'll tell you this. I remember the first day I signed up for the Leadville 100 mountain bike race. And my wife and I went and watched the movie on that. Do you know that race by chance at all?
I don't. I saw a little bit when I was researching, but it looks like a brutal one.
Oh, it's a brutal race. You can go look at it. It's called The Race Across the Sky. And there's a reason for that. But we went and watched this movie, and literally, like, people are crying. I mean, it's the hardest mountain bike race, if not in the entire United States, one of the top in the United States, okay? If not the world. And long story short, after I watched that movie, I'm like, I got to sign up for this. And my wife literally looked at me and said, did you just watch the same movie as I watched? And I'm like, yeah, I think I did. And she's like, you're freaking crazy. But it scared the crap out of me. And I just had to face it. Like, I just knew I had to face it. So I did it. I don't know. There's just something innately in me that I just, when those things happen, I just got to do it. So I do.
Do you feel like you have something to prove by doing them? Or like, what do you think pushes you to do those things?
Yeah, there's always something I have to prove to myself. You know, I used to have this saying a lot that I'd say to people is I felt like the world was against me. And then I realized it was only myself. I woke up and I was like, oh man, it's really me against me. And what I achieve is really up to me, right? It's me pushing me, not the world pushing me, right? And the day you realize that, it's a big ha-ha moment, because a lot of people like the world's against me, the world. But really, we're our own worst enemy is really the truth, right? I can either build myself up or I can beat myself, but nobody else can beat me or build me up. I have to let that process be my process, right? And we forget that in life way too many times. It's somebody else's fault. It's always this, it's always that. When reality is, it's like, yeah, but I'm the one that created my reality.
So do you find it, because, and I wanna kind of dive into, I guess, like with the bodybuilding, I remember seeing you one time and you were kind of a normal looking dude. And then the next time I saw you, you're just like ripped.
Yeah.
Do you go into those because it's a challenge, or do you go into it like seeking to be the best at it? Like, what's your mindset when you go into that cycling competition, you go into bodybuilding? Is it like, because I've seen people do it for both reasons, right? Some people are like, I just want to prove that I can go and be a bodybuilder and I can compete. Or other people are like, I want to show that I can win. Like, what's your mentality when you go into those different things?
Yeah, I don't do anything to not win. Like, I full on, when I sign up for something, I'm there to win and I'm there to compete at the top level as I possibly can. And the real reason that I did it all was because I wanted to prove that with a coach or with the right mentor, you can substantially move how fast you get your outcomes. And I did that in cycling, I did that in bodybuilding, and I've done that in team roping. There's no way in my life where I've inserted a coach. I've even did it in business with Russell Brunson. There's nowhere in my life that I've not inserted a coach that's at a higher level. And I go through that there is a system to what I do that I've let them follow their systems, not altered their systems, that I haven't achieved the outcome that I wanted to achieve.
So, I mean, that makes total sense as to why you obviously coach, why you're an advocate of coaching. What do you think it is that keeps so many people though from getting into coaching? I mean, I have my own perspective, right? Like, I brought a lot of people into coaching, but do you think it's pride? Do you think it's, what do you think it is?
I think the number one thing is fear. And the reason, I'll just tell you why, because if you knew, Derek, if you knew you signed up with me today, I'm going to make you $1 million tomorrow, you'd sign a check for whatever amount it was. Like, yep. The only reason you wouldn't sign the check is because you honestly don't know. You have a fear inside of you that the outcome just might not happen. So you haven't gone through enough with me to understand that it's going to happen, right? But once you understand that, nothing stops you. You'll just do it, right? So the fear is if I signed up for a bodybuilding competition, my fear is I'm not going to be able to do it. Like, I'm not going to be able to do the meal plan. I'm not going to be, you know, it's fear of not being able to accomplish. And that's what holds us back in so many aspects of our life. What I think, not just my personal opinion, is that we're scared either of the result or we're scared that we're not going to get the result. One of those two.
So how do you get through it? Like, if I was considering maybe working with a coach or something like that, like, how do you get people to, you got to do some ninja sales tactics to get people started?
Yeah,
or
yeah, you know, and I think that's a big thing. And you're a sales guy, you know, this is your background. So I'm going to speak to that just a little bit. Here's my personal opinion on it, right? This is how I go about it, right? Right or wrong. So what I do is I go look at who's had success stories, testimonials. Testimonials are my number one thing. So when I started into bodybuilding, I looked and saw that Ryan Benson was taking 6 to 7 physique bodybuilders to Mr. Olympia every year, consistently. Well, that tells me something, right? That tells me that this guy must be dialing in something to get somebody from here clear to the number one stage in the world, right? So when I did my research, I started to figure out, could I get a coach like that? Because I want the best coach if I can get him first, right? So I went and approached him. And when I got him, he's like, yeah, come out to California. I went to California. When I met him, he's like, so what's your end goal? And I told him, I said, this is it. He goes, take your shirt off. Well, at that point, man, I was not no pretty sight. I take my shirt off and he goes, yeah, in 1 year, I can have you in a competition. I'm like, now, so if I pay you, I can look like that and win a competition. He goes, yes, sir. I go, and I will promise you, I will not cheat. I will follow everything that you tell me to do if that's my outcome. He goes, that'll be your outcome. And I knew it because I saw it. They were all around me. They were in the same gym as I was in. So it was easy for me. No brainer. Most expensive bodybuilding coach I've ever hired to this day. Let's be clear. But guess what? 1 year from that date, I stood on stage. Not only did I win my category, but I won a sword. Okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. And so kudos to him because he was the coach I needed. Now, I remember when I hired Russell Brunson. So Russell has a process where you have to fill all this stuff out. You had to get on a call with a coach and all this kind of stuff. Literally, I'd been through so much. The sales call to me was like, dude, I'm ready to sign up. Well, we have to approve. Like, okay, go through. But I was really more pissed off about the process than I was, here's my money, you know? And it wasn't really, anyway, long story short is, I think a lot of times in mine, it's because I've done so much research and I've reached out to other people to find out if it's legit. And when I find out it's legit, that's how I do it. I know it's like, here's my money. Let's get this going. But I don't think enough people are willing to go through and do enough research and find some testimonials and really dig into the, to know that. So they have the confidence of, here's the check. Let's just get going.
Yeah, no, makes sense. So I got to ask, what's a day like in the life of a bodybuilder? Because for those of you guys who don't know, Bart was just ripped. I can't tell what you got on going underneath now, but obviously you were just like absolutely ripped. Was it, yeah, what was like a normal eating day, or what did you do on a normal day to look like that?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously your system changes and when you get into prep, right? So up until the time that you actually are, you've got like a month or 2 months out from a show, it's very different than when you start getting closer to the show. So it depends on what part of the journey that you're talking about. But the reason you see all the abs and you do all that kind of stuff is because you start to deplete out, right? Mm-hmm. But what people don't realize is I was eating more food than I've ever eaten in my entire life, the entire process. Most people say, well, I would die, I would starve to death. And its reality is, no. You'll be eating more than you've ever eaten in your life. The difference is, it's like a horse. What do we feed horses?
Alfalfa, hay.
Every single day. Do they get anything else but hay every single day?
No.
Okay. That's the problem we have. You eat the same, well, not everybody. You can mix it up. I'm just telling you in a nutshell, right? If you want reality, right? You're eating chicken and rice. You're eating very basic things to make shit happen. That's the problem. You're eating a lot of it, but you're eating so clean and you're eating the same things that the process can work. And so you've got to be very mentally strong, because when other yummy things come into play,
yeah,
you have to say, no, I'm a Ferrari. I'm only eating for one purpose and one purpose only. And that's to be where I want to be, right? Because I'm eating for this body. And so I think that's the hardest mental thing. Now, let's be clear. There's going to be a lot of people on here that, I know you don't just have to eat rice and chicken. I'm not so ignorant to not know that. I know that. But I am telling you that the things that we do eat, generally speaking, are not ice cream. It's not brownies. It's not the cupcakes. It's not all that stuff. Even though once in a while you can do that. So bear with me. Don't bash on me. I get it. But that was the hardest part, is mentally understanding you have to measure your food, understand that you have to eat certain times of the day, and understand that it's a process and it's a system.
No, absolutely. I mean, the willpower of those guys, right? Because I know a lot of people kind of bag on bodybuilders, but I remember it was probably been 10 years ago. I was going through P90X, mm-hmm, and I was like 2 months into it. It was kind of starting to look a little better, starting to feel a little better. And we went to this picnic, and I remember there was this guy with the shirt off and he had the abs and everything else. And somebody I was with was like, yeah, I was gonna, like, look at that douchebag. And I was like, no. Like, I've been doing P90X for 2 months. If I had a six pack, you would never even know I owned a shirt. So you can call that guy a douchebag all you want. But when you know like how much work it takes to get that six pack,
yep,
dude, if I was him, I would never wear a shirt. So no, I mean the willpower, the mental ability to eat what you need to, let alone obviously working out and doing that regimen. I mean, it's fascinating to me. So kudos to you for doing that. So now I want to flip though to the other side of this, which is, how in the hell do you get into a makeup business?
Well, that's a story within itself. So I happened to have lost everything in another business, and I didn't even know how to turn on a computer. Luckily at that point in time, which is kind of a long story, I was able to go to Chet Holmes, Tony Robbins, a huge business event. It was $30,000 to go to this event. It's the first time they were ever doing it, Las Vegas, Nevada. Gary Vaynerchuk was there. Onik, I mean, all these people that today are like big superstars. And then they were barely getting started. Brendan Burchard, all these guys. Okay. They were all on this stage talking about internet marketing, this, that, and the other. I had another guy that was helping me do some stuff. Long story short, the moral of the story was, you had to find something that was recession proof, bulletproof, and that you could sell internationally. That was the goal. So I started doing all this research and studying, and found that makeup even sold in the worst time of World War II. Women were still buying lipstick. I'm like, this is it.
Yeah.
And then long story short, I started to find out who was the number one makeup artist in the world, who had the best system, because I only buy systems and invest in systems. We always think that we're buying what we really invest in, Derek, is systems. the person who is delivering the system is the attractive character. They're just the delivering mechanism, but we're all buying systems. So anyway, I invested in systems. I was very, very good that way. So I invested in this. We started to put the makeup school together, and that's been 11 years ago today. And that thing still is going, still does very well. Super excited about it. But that's how I got into it, was I wanted to make money and I needed to make money. And that was the model. And I was not going to be the attractive character in that, because I don't know, I didn't know a thing about makeup at that point in time, but I did know that it would resonate with the women that we were trying to sell to.
That's crazy. And so are you even like really involved in the day-to-day operations at this point? Or is it just, I mean, mainly on autopilot? Cause I know that's everybody's dream, right? The autopilot money, but
yeah, let's be clear. It's mainly on autopilot. But there's certain things that we do every single month. There's certain little things, but for the most part, it's been on autopilot for the last 7 years.
That's awesome. Isn't it funny though? Like when you talk about going to events, cause I know a lot of people, even like with Funnel Hacking Live and the ClickFunnels events, they're always like, what is that about? And it's like, it's just cool. Because I remember one of the things, everybody that listens to the podcast know, we had started up our direct to consumer meat business, right? Our beef business. And one of the reasons that got me really intrigued by that is I watched Tom Bilyeu at the last Funnel Hacking Live.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he was like, you want a $1 billion business? Create something that as soon as somebody consumes it, they need more of it. I'm like, huh, that is so fascinating to me. Cause you know, he's talking about his Quest bar or whatever. And he's like, yeah, like as soon as somebody would eat it, they would need another one and then another one. And so you have lifetime customers if what you're doing is actually good. And so I remember thinking, because you know, you got kind of get in the internet marketing space and it's all this customer acquisition and how do you do it? And it's like, yeah, but what if you just produce something awesome that as soon as people consume it, they want more of it because it's good, right? And I was like, huh. And then that was like what led us down the path. So I think a lot of people discount like how, I don't know, how going to events, being able to network with people, but also just seeing speakers like that. Yeah. I mean, do you see that being something too that's good, or are you one of the ones that's more like, I would want a one-on-one coach, I don't really care about speakers, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I'm going to add on one thing to your statement, because I think it's really, really powerful. And that's what network marketing companies do, is exactly that. And they're, all their model is, if it goes down the drain and up in smoke, they want to invest in it.
Yeah.
Down the drain and up in smoke, right? So just think about that when you're creating something, because I think that you're dead on. Now, the importance of events, I can't even stress. Events get you excited. They get you pumped up. They get you going. The problem with events is this. 85% of the time you come home and you don't do anything. Yep. You're so overwhelmed, right? But the cool part is it introduces you and networks you to new concepts and get your mind rolling. So I'm very, very much a fan of events. I'm more of a fan of group coaching than I am anything. I think group coaching is where you learn the most, as long as you have a really good leader that is a step ahead of everybody in the group coaching program that can kind of lead all of you together and rise you all together up. I think that's really, really a good model in my personal opinion, but that's the way I see it. But I would never, ever, ever not say to go to events. I think they're really good. And I think they're an important part of what we do for sure. Yep.
Do you do any type of like mastermind events or group coaching or anything like that?
So I will have a group coaching program starting this year. So thank you for bringing that up. It will be started this year. I'm super excited about it. What I've been doing now is one-on-one coaching. The reason I've been doing it is our great friend, Russell Brunson. Like he's the one that just like, Bart, man, you've done everything from brick and mortar. You've done all these businesses. You could really help a lot of people. I didn't believe him, but here I am today. And what I do is kind of a hybrid of that. So my group coaching, they all get group coaching one-on-one. That's all day Mondays for me. And then what happens is I bring in experts on Wednesday that teach their process. Some of that's 10 weeks. Some of that depends on their course. So like I'd bring like somebody like you, Derek, if you had something that you wanted to coach on, you'd come in, you coach my group of high ticket entrepreneurs on your concepts, your things, which they've got money. Some of them have hired coaches that have been in there to help do like their webinar or help do different things like that. I don't care. I think the more people that they can invest in and grow their business, more power to them. I'm not a fear-based person. So therefore they get their one-on-one coaching. And so let's say that you coach today in my high ticket coaching, then instantly what would happen is on our next call, I will say, hey, anything on Derek's stuff you have questions on or things that I can help you with or clarify. And then we also get into all the other, their numbers, things like that, that I go through with them. to excel their business. So that way they get kind of two, they get the hybrid of it. They're learning from somebody else. They get to see different mindsets and they get to talk amongst themselves in their businesses and how it fits. But at the same time, they're getting one-on-one coaching. So let's say that they're going through something they don't want everybody else to know about, or there's things affecting their business that are kind of a little more close to their chest that they won't share in a group coaching format. Yep. They get that capability. So mine's kind of a hybrid right now. I am going to do a mastermind itself with 10 people, and it's strictly going to be that type of thing where it's just a high level people like yourself that are wanting to go to that next level type of a program. But yes, that'll be the show.
I think masterminds are so powerful. I think the trouble with them is finding the right ones, right? You know, making sure. I've been a part of some that it's like, I mean, I'm not trying to ever say you're better than anybody else, but it's just not the right fit, maybe not the right people. But man, when you get in the right one,
amen,
it's good stuff. So I want to honor your time, Bart, and I'll start wrapping it up here. Really, the podcast is kind of centered around three things. We love to talk about mindset, or what we call liberation, lifestyle, and legacy. Those are kind of the three pillars that we go through. Obviously, we've got to talk a lot about your mindset, and I love the fact that you've done so many different things. Because sometimes I like, me and my wife have had this conversation, and I think you probably get this, right? Because when you grow up, maybe super rural, but then you're also at an event with a bunch of like kind of high dollar people in a city, and you're like, man, I get along really well with all my buddies, like out hunting and fishing and tearing stuff up in the middle of nowhere. But yet, like, I don't feel out of place either, like sitting around a table having a $100 steak or whatever. Yep. And so I don't know. I love the fact that you're able to do both of those things. I think what I would consider to be well-rounded, right? You got your Gucci glasses and your elk ring on, right? I always love that ring. but no, so I love that fact of going through the mindset with you. Obviously, the lifestyle that you create, I mean, you're able to go rope calves. You've raised an amazing family. I want to get into the legacy side of it with you as we wrap up here, because you have done so many things and because you've met so many people. What do you feel like, maybe when you get to the end of this journey here, what do you want the legacy to be for yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. The biggest thing that I want people to know is they can live life. And that's the one thing that I find that I have, like you just said, I've done. I'll never forget the first time that I got in Japan. I was into Tokyo. I'd never seen that many people in my entire life. Not only I'd never seen that many people in my entire life, they all look the same to me. I was like in overwhelm, and I'll never forget that moment, right? You're just like, wow, I'm from Little Rigby, Idaho. Like, and here's, there's buses, trains, people everywhere, right? But it really was like this, wow, I can have a human experience here on earth. That's just incredible. The food, I'd never tasted these foods. Amazing flavor. I was like, wow, right? And I promised myself from that day forward that I would leave a legacy of living life. And so with my kids, I've really, 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 really challenged them to live life. Now, I'm going to add to that. This is the problem that we have in a lot of society today that I feel like I bridged a little bit. So when I was in high school and things, let's be clear, I really had rodeo friends. Like, they were my friends. They were people I wanted to be around. So there was other people that I kind of, I wouldn't say shun, but I was like, I don't fit in your crowd, right? Yeah. When I had that aha moment, there was something else that was very, very clear to me. I did fit in their crowd. I was the one that was pushing them away, not them pushing me away. And this is what I found. This is how my Rolodex got to be so big, was when I stepped into them and said, hey, I want to kind of be a gamer. And they're like, what? You got a cowboy hat on. Yeah, but you guys are pretty cool. And they're looking at you like, dude, like, you don't belong. And I'm like, no, I really do belong with you. And if you don't like the cowboy hat, guess what? It's okay by me. I'll put a gamer hat on. Like, it doesn't bother me. I'm not here to prove that I have to be a cowboy in your world. Like, I want to learn about your world. I'm here to learn about you. They'd be like, for real? For real. And when you dig into their stuff, all of a sudden, guess what happens to your network of all these people that you would have never on earth get to know? Because you were able to change this hat. We think we have to be this attractive character in every aspect of our life. Well, Superman sure as hell ain't. Kent Clark was a totally different dude than when he was Superman. See, but we're so afraid to go get into a different network and just become part of their culture and learn who they are. But that's how you become a human.
Yeah.
How you experience life. So yeah, I've dressed Russell Brunson in some of the most epic clothes you ever seen in your life, but I can still go home and jump and put in a cowboy hat and go ride horses with the best of the best. I can still go get in spandex and go ride bikes with the best of the best. Or I can go take it all off and jump in a bodybuilding gym and lift with the best of the best. Or I can nerd out here on this and talk about internet marketing, the best of the best, right? Yeah. But how have I done that is by being willing to take my hat off and put a different hat on and say, hey, let's go. I'm human. Let's have a human experience. Teach me what you know, and not look at it as you're stupid. Oh my God. I can't believe you'd even think that way. What? That's not like, no, wow. I never thought of it from that perspective. Teach me more. Teach me more, you know? And then I found out, whoa, I needed you worse than you needed me. That's See, good. In life, Derek, I need you more than you need me. Because at the end of the day, if I'll let you teach me, I'll let you mentor me, I guarantee you have a lot to give me. And when I realize that, see, game changes in human. And I want to leave that legacy that my kids, they can take their hat off and put a different hat on and go live life and be happy. And that they can do that again, and they can experience the world from whatever avatar they want to be.
So good. It's so good, because I think a lot of people look at maybe small town rural people as being very fixed minded, but I also think it happens no matter where you're from. It could be based on your neighborhood. It could be based on where you grew up, whether it's in Riggins, Rigby, yep. LA in your community, where everything is going one direction. And you're right. I really think that our country would have a lot fewer problems if we were a little more open, like you said, to change hats, see what everybody's got going on, see why they feel a certain way. Yep. So, I mean, that's great stuff, man. I really enjoyed our conversation. if people want to find you, where can they find you? Instagram, Facebook, where's the best place to follow along with you?
They should reach out to Derek and he'll sell them into my program. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, you never know.
Yeah, seriously. No, I mean, honestly, like, if you want to find me, I'm pretty easy to find. Instagram's really good for you. Facebook's really good for you. And if you absolutely can't find me there, reach out to Derek. He can always reach me. He's an amazing friend. Please follow, watch everything he does. Like, that's one thing I will say about you, man. You're a phenomenal leader, and you've always been able to lead without having to be in the front. And that says a lot about you. And that says a lot about your integrity and who you are. And I look up to you for that and respect you for that. So to all the followers out there, listen to every one of these episodes. This is an amazing human that's leading you in the right direction. And he's the kind of coach that you want out there, because he's digging people like me out of our shell and, you know, getting our stories out to bless your lives. So thank you for taking the time for me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate the kind words. I really do. Well, everybody, I know y'all enjoyed this one. Make sure to reach out to Bart, follow along with his journey. You might see him in a crazy suit one day and out trying to stick a bowl with the bow the next day. Always good stuff. So again, thanks, Bart. I appreciate you.
You bet, my friend. Anytime.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Primal King Podcast. There's one thing that I will ask you to do. Please make sure that you are subscribed to the show so you get all of the new episodes coming out. Also, please make sure that you rate and review the show so that way other people can have access to this podcast, to this content, and this community. Again, thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.